everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Standout Job Seeker presented by JobScan. I'm your host, Sydney, and I'm really excited to be presenting this episode to you. I interviewed Kiana Carter, who is previously a recruiter at Google and GoPuff. She's now a career coach. She had so much to share. So this interview is going to be great. I say this every time, but I encourage you to listen to the whole episode. Now, if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, first of all, thank you for listening to all of our followers and subscribers who have been here from the beginning. It's been great, and I have so many more episodes and great interviews lined up for you. But just so you know, I'm also doing video versions of the podcast. So if you're listening to the audio version, you can watch the video of each episode on the JobScan YouTube channel. So it makes it a little more personal. You can see the person that I'm talking to as I do the interview. So go to the JobScan YouTube channel to watch the video if you want to do that. Also, if you're listening on Spotify, Spotify also has a video there. And subscribe to our YouTube channel because I'm going to be posting clips from each episode. So if you don't want to or can't listen to the entire episode, I'm going to publish smaller 3 to 5 minute clips from each episode. So kind of breaks it down to small little bite-sized portions. So go over to the JobScan YouTube channel, check it out there, as well as the full episode, which I'm going to publish. But thank you again for listening. Thank you to our new watchers on YouTube and on Spotify for video. Let's get into this interview with Kiana Carter. It's really great. So thanks for watching. We'll get to the interview now. Well, Kiana, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for joining. I'm so excited to talk to you because of your background in recruiting at Google and GoPuff. I imagine you have so much knowledge to share. First, I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself to the audience and where you're coming from, your background, and your expertise.
Yes. And Sydney, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So as Sydney mentioned, my name is Kiana. I do have a background in recruiting. I've been recruiting for the last 8 years. My first job right after college was at Facebook, where I was in the healthcare space, wasn't really in recruiting yet, but did put my feet into recruiting. And that's when I realized I wanted to dive deeper and make that into my career. So my first official recruiting role was at Google. I started as a recruiting coordinator, so really just learning the ropes in terms of what candidates are applying for, what resumes should look like, how to schedule their interviews, how to team up with recruiters. I was in that role for 10 months and got a promotion to be a full-cycle recruiter, and it was amazing, and that's where I've learned all the ins and outs of recruiting at Google and how candidate experience is top of mind, how to say things and what not to say in interviews, and also drafting offers. So I was at Google for 2 years, then moved on to startup. The startup space is a lot different from that big tech space, but that's where I went to GoPuff and got to build out all of their engineering and data teams as a recruiter. Wow. So that was fun. I was at GoPuff for 2.5 years and then decided to branch into a new space of career coaching. So in August of last year, I did launch Your Key Coach. My website is yourkeycoach.com. And my mission is to unlock your career potential, whether that's through resume writing, LinkedIn optimization, interview preparation, and salary negotiation. So really taking what I learned from Google, GoPuff, and really just teaching people the other side of the job search. So helping them land a new role.
Yeah. And I can imagine at a place like Google where y'all have to get so many applicants for every role. Do you have an estimate of how many resumes you looked at in your time as a recruiter?
I would say, like, at Google, we get millions of resumes, right?
Millions?
So, obviously, yes, millions. Like,
wow.
There's some crazy statistic about, like, getting an interview at Google is equivalent to, like, winning the lottery or something like that. Like, it's tricky because of so many applications. But throughout my career, I want to say I've at least looked at at this point, probably 10,000 resumes, including from coaching too.
Yeah.
So I've pretty much, I can look at a resume for 20 seconds and know whether we're moving forward with them or not.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So I was thinking thousands, the million, I was not expecting millions. But yeah, so you've pretty much seen it all. And I've heard that before, that recruiters, the longer they've been doing it, or like the, like actually being able to evaluate a resume quickly is a skill. Like they are actually actively trying to be faster at it. So that kind of leads into my main question, just looking at like big picture, high level. When you're looking at a resume, what are the key differences between the best resumes that you've seen where you're like, oh my God, we have to bring them in, and the worst resumes? What do those people do differently on the really good resumes that get them an interview?
Yes. So let's start with the best resumes. Whenever I think of a best resume, I'm thinking of, okay, what job am I hiring for? So that's top of mind. So when I have that as top of mind, then I'm starting to source. And when I source through resumes, I'm looking at what's their first role, whether it's their most current role or the last role they held. We're looking there. So does their current role align with the role I'm hiring for? And I would say with this job market, it is best to make lateral moves. A lot of hiring managers do want to see folks that currently have been in the role that they're hiring for or have done very specific things that align to the role that we're hiring for. So we're looking at those in the title, the keywords. So if I'm looking for a product manager, for example, I would need to see product manager at Google or product manager at GoPuff for me to even continue reading. Like if it's someone that's, I don't know, like a nurse applying for a product manager role, I'm probably not going to read the rest of your resume.
Okay.
So starts with the title. Next is, does the resume look clean and concise? Is it grammatically correct? Is the spelling correct? I remember working with a hiring manager at GoPuff, and we were looking for an analytics engineer. And although the content was great, she was like, I see 2 to 3 spelling errors. So I don't want to move forward with this candidate because their attention to detail isn't there. So definitely keep in mind, like, the content has to be there, but also make sure it's clean, concise. And also, too, we want to see metrics. We want to see data. Like, we want to see that you made an impact. That's going to separate you from the other candidates that we're looking at. And let's say they don't have that data point or those metrics, and you do, you're most likely going to make it through the next round or make it to an interview. And then lastly, I would say those action words too. Like, a lot of people need to know how to lead. Have you managed something? Have you built something? Like, what have you done with those action verbs? And making sure you don't use the same action verbs for every bullet point. So if you say managed 4 times, switch it up. Say led. Okay. Then guided. Say directed. Okay. So keep it concise, but also mix it up with those action words.
Okay. So that all was amazing. Like, that in itself was gold. The job title match. So I found the same thing. We actually did we looked at data from all of the resumes and job applications that JobScan users have done. And we found that having a job title match increased their interview rate by, I want to say, like, it was like a 3x increase in interview rate. So yeah, that lines up with everything I've heard. And it makes sense. Like, if I'm hiring for a role, I want someone who's done that role. And it doesn't mean that the other people don't have value. Like, you know, you don't want to be harsh, but it's just like, I need to find the best person for this role. So I think that makes sense. Would you say then that, like, you know, you mentioned, like, especially in this job market, we're looking for people with a job title match. Is now, like, maybe not the best time to make a career change? Or do you think that could still work on a job application?
I would say if you're an internal employee, making a career change is much faster and efficient versus going externally and trying to make that change. Reason being is because when you're an internal move or when you're going upwards internally, they're going to trust you more. And you have those data points from your performance reviews. You have support from your manager, all of those things that back you up in terms of getting that promotion or move up versus externally trying to make those moves. They don't know you. I would say you would have to get a referral if you're trying to make those upward moves externally, but your best chances are getting that upward move internally.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. That makes sense. Okay. So then the next thing you mentioned was clean and concise. Does that mean like the formatting or the design of the resume? Okay. Why is that helpful in evaluating the candidate?
So a lot of resumes, I feel like a lot of people want to be creative or they want to put all these crazy colors to stand out. And I have not seen any like statistics that say like the more yellow or orange you put, the more likely you're going to get a resume. Like, no, it's all about content. That's the focus, but also clean. We don't want the words. We don't want it to just be a wall of text. Like, we want to get away from that. You want to make sure that there's spaces, easy to read, the bullet points aren't running over. I would say that lines up with the worst resumes where it's just too much information and you're just putting so much to make up for whatever it is, where it's, you have to think of your resume as a ticket to an interview. So you want them to look at your resume and be like, oh, they did this. I want to hear more about this. Let's get on a call with them.
Okay.
You don't got to put everything on your resume. Your resume should really be your highlights so that when you go into the interviews, you're talking through those bullet points and expanding further. Yeah. So that's really what you really want to do. And then also to be careful with Canva. I know a lot of people use Canva to get their templates. What I've learned is that a lot of applicant tracking systems, or ATS is what I'll refer to during this podcast. So ATS systems, they don't read them correctly or it for like the format gets jumbled. So you really want to make sure that your resume can be read through Microsoft Word or Google Docs. There's a bunch of different websites that offer those formats and they're free. So definitely keep that in mind.
Yeah. That's one thing. So like our resume builder, we have templates in there. And one of the things I hear a lot is like, they're so boring. Like they're not, they don't look really cool. And it's like, this isn't, you're not trying to look pretty. You're trying to get a job. Okay. So yes, it's very simple. And we've also tested like a lot of the ATSs and we saw that a lot of them couldn't read resumes with a lot of graphics or tables or whatever. And is that like, so when you were saying like it would get jumbled and stuff, would you use an ATS to like search for certain like job titles or like why does that formatting matter?
Yeah, so a lot of companies do use their ATS first to find candidates before they go on LinkedIn to do like the passive sourcing. Because anyone in the ATS is essentially, we don't have to sell them the job. They are wanting to work for us. So it's less of a sell versus trying to find people on LinkedIn and we have to sell the role and the company. And especially for GoPuff, for example, no one really knew what GoPuff was compared to Google, where Google, you don't really got to do a hard sell.
Yeah.
So it's like when we're looking through the ATS and we do find good candidates, we are looking at that clean resume and making sure that the ATS system can filter it out and read it.
Yeah.
So it is really important to have that template.
Okay.
Correct.
And then I imagine too, like, you know, along the lines of like a lot of colors and stuff, is some of that too just like making it easier for the recruiter to look at the resume and read it? Like they are humans after all. And if the whole page is yellow, like that's just not appealing. Is there an element of that of like, yes, ATS friendly, but also just like human friendly?
Yes, that's a good point. And like you said, it's human friendly is very important. And, you know, all the colors and it can be a lot. And I would say the only time you may want to focus on it, the template being, you know, colorful is maybe if you're applying for like a graphic design role. But even then, it's like, use your portfolio to showcase your style. You don't have to do that through a resume. You can maybe gently do it, but you don't have to do it solely through the resume. And another point too is pictures. So I know some people like to put their photo on their resume. I don't recommend that. I think LinkedIn is where they're going to verify who you are and want to see your face. But your resume should solely be just your information. It shouldn't have your photo, because that's when the whole discrimination laws can kind of come into play. And we don't want that to factor in. Like, they should only be seeing what you do, and it should just be text.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So then, so then more on to that, you talked about like some of the best resumes and what's different about them. And then some of the things of like the worst resumes, like absolutely do not do this. One of the things was too much information, spelling mistakes. Mm-hmm. Are there other things where a resume is like absolutely not, like things that people should definitely avoid?
Yeah. So with too much information, too little information. So there has to be a balance, right? Okay. Where it's like you should have concise sentences, but also make sure that you have that action verb, you have those metrics, and then what did you achieve? That's really what that those bullet points should have. And if you just put, you know, I worked on a project. Well, that's a little too vague. Like, what project was it? How many people did you work with? What tools did you use? And what problem did you solve? So you really want to expand on those bullet points. But again, does not need to be a whole paragraph for one bullet point. It should literally be a sentence.
Okay.
So again, just making sure that it's not too wordy, but also don't make it too vague.
Yeah.
That's really what is one piece of that as a worst resume. And then another two, again, it is just all those colors, if the fonts are mismatched and things like that. Like, you want to make sure the resume aligns from top to bottom. So making sure the fonts are the right sizes, like it's not too big, but then also easy to read. Like, don't go under 10 font. Like, maybe 10 to 11 is like the average, maybe 12. And then also pages on pages on pages. Ugh, we don't have time to read pages.
Yeah.
I would say for any roles, director and above, you can go over that one page mark. So I would say 2 pages max for director and above roles.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're like an executive, obviously you do need to highlight all of those things that you've done in the last 10 plus years. Anything manager, senior manager or below, one page is enough. And if, let's say, you've held so many different roles, you can have a section that says additional roles and just highlight the titles. And I would say that's for any roles that are over 10 years old and you can't fit it on your one page resume.
Okay. So even if the job is relevant, like maybe it's even the same job title, it's more about how recent it was and just talk about the most. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So then, this kind of like, so one of my questions was like, let's say a person, they like, they've applied all of these tips and they have like this really great resume. It's tailored to the job and all that. And they're qualified. They have all the skills. Sometimes people feel like they are a really good candidate, but they still don't get an interview. What, like, what mistakes could they be making that they don't even realize? Or when you're looking at resumes and there are so many qualified candidates, how do you decide who gets an interview, like who to bring in for an interview?
Yeah. So I would say with this job market and with the clients that I've been helping, it isn't as easy as it is before to get interviews. And I would say now is the time to start networking and really doing your due diligence to find people that could vouch for you. Because you have to think, when you are submitting your resume, they have no idea who you are. And you have to think like that with you and the hundreds of other applicants. I would say a lot of hiring managers are thinking referral wise. So I know at Google, for example, we would say good people know good people. So we would look at those employee referrals mostly, because that's another point to like the employee engagement as well. So employees, they feel like they're heard if they refer their people that they know. It doesn't have to be their friends. It could be anyone. So really just doing your due diligence to network. And then also too, maybe your job search strategy isn't great. If you're applying to roles that have been posted over a week and have hundreds of applicants, you should just assume that they already have a solid pipeline. And if you already submit your resume a week later, you're going to be at the bottom of the barrel. So okay. It's really thinking about those roles that have just been posted within 24 hours. And then also being able to reach out to your network or connections for them to push your resume up to those hiring managers.
Okay, that's really good advice. Like first, the networking and referrals, but also knowing which jobs to not apply for based on like when it was posted. And like, you know, that might take out a lot of jobs, but if you didn't have a chance to get an interview anyways, then it's really just about being more efficient. Yeah. Was it ever tough? Like if you're looking at a resume and they're like, all these people are qualified, but I can't interview all of them. How do I pick? Or is it not like that? And like, you just interview everyone who is qualified. Do you ever have to like make tough choices like that?
It really just depends on the hiring manager, really. I think as a recruiter, I will screen as many people as possible. But as a recruiter, we don't make those hiring decisions. So we are only responsible for finding those candidates for the hiring manager. So let's say I screen 20 people, and I submit all 20. The hiring manager's like, well, I don't got time to interview 20 people. So out of this 20, who is the best, the best of the best out of these 20? And let's say we can only interview 5. So it's really like the hiring managers are thinking from a time perspective because, again, as a hiring manager, they're not just doing hiring manager work. They're also doing their actual role.
Yeah.
So you have to think in that sense. So I think at the end of the day, when it comes to that resume piece, yes, you can have the best resume. Yes, you can have the best referral, but it's really up to the hiring manager on what direction they want to move.
Okay. So you really like have to go above and beyond in any way that you can. Yeah.
Yes. So from resume, from recruiter screen, when the recruiter's interviewing you, you have to really set yourself apart as well.
Okay. Yeah, that was going to be my next question of like, what are some examples of candidates who did go above and beyond? Like, what does that mean to stand out like that?
Yeah, so it's really knowing the company that you're interviewing for. So, for example, GoPuff, when people were ecstatic and excited to work for GoPuff, and when I would ask them why GoPuff, and they would give me all these reasons why they would make an impact there, I was like, yes, this is going to be an easy sell.
Mm.
Because as a recruiter, when we're thinking about candidates, we're thinking, is this person going to sign our offer? Because that's a metric for us that we have to fill, right? So if you're excited about the role, you know what the role is. When I feel like this is something that you really want to pursue and I'm not just another job that you're interviewing for on your list, then I'm going to push you forward and I'm going to let the hiring manager know, listen, this candidate knows GoPuff. They use it all the time. They've researched our company. They have the relevant skills. Like, this is someone that's going to do great here and they're going to do their best work. So it's really understanding when you are job searching, know who you're interviewing for and show that excitement during those interviews.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I tell people this all the time, like the recruiters have metrics just like you. So it's not like they don't want to hire anyone. Like the opportunity is there. You just got to show them that you're driven, that you're interested. Yeah, all that.
Right.
Okay, yes. So then going back to the resume, what if you had to like put it in simple terms, what is it that you're looking for when you're looking at the resume? Is it all just experience? Is it skills? Is it achievements? Like, what is it that you're looking for whenever you're going through those resumes?
So the three things that I look for as a recruiter, and this is just speaking for myself, I mean, every other recruiter is different, would be relevant experience. Because when I am in those hiring manager meetings and we are talking about the role, the main thing that we're looking for is someone that knows, that can come in and really just dominate the role. Okay. So having relevant experience and having that aligned job title that they currently have to the role that I'm hiring for. Next would be transferable skills. So I want to make sure that you have the tools that we need for someone to succeed in this role. Do you have experience? Are you capable? Is there anything that, you know, aligns with the job description? So really making sure that your resume aligns with the job description so that when I hop on the phone with you, I'm confirming, hey, it says you did this. Can you tell me more about that? So we want to know about those transferable skills. And lastly, is your achievements. What have you achieved, especially for a leadership role? If I'm hiring for someone that's going to be a manager, for example, I want to know, how many people have you managed? Tell me about your management style. What other things have you done outside of management? Have you achieved any goals as a manager? So really just understanding what have you achieved and accomplished. And that kind of shows me that you're able to accomplish those goals and more if we were to hire you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Because it's like when I'm interviewing or evaluating candidates, you get to a point where they all have the skills you're looking for. Like if I'm hiring a writer, everyone who applies is a writer. So I want to know how good you are as a writer. So that's why like the achievements or measurable results, that tells me your skill level, not just if you have the skill, but your skill level. So yeah, I think that's definitely important. So then like kind of along those lines, and maybe I just answered it, but my question was like, how do recruiters evaluate talent before the interview? Like, is it just all in the resume? Do they look at other things? Is resume like 100%, or are there other ways that they evaluate this candidate to see if they want to interview them?
Yeah, so I would say resume is top of mind, but also we're looking at your LinkedIn. We're looking at your website if you have one, or your portfolio. Just really depends on the role. Like, for example, a graphic designer, we're going to look at your portfolio to just confirm or see, like, what does your work style look like? But for maybe a sales role, we'll probably look at, you know, you want to look at your resume and see, like, what you've accomplished, but we'll also look at your LinkedIn. So I would say LinkedIn and resume go hand in hand. I don't think your resume and LinkedIn have to look exactly the same. But what I tell my clients is they have to mirror each other or reflect each other. So I would go in on metrics with your resume and then your LinkedIn, since it's the World Wide Web, you want to kind of just be mindful that you don't want to put too much out there.
Okay.
So you want to just make it generalized. I would say whatever's on your resume can go on your LinkedIn, but take out the metrics and save those metrics for your resume.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I usually tell people that, because one question I get a lot is, how do I tailor my LinkedIn profile? Because like my resume, I can tailor it for every job I apply for, but my LinkedIn, I only have one. And so it's just like, it's a little more broad. Like you're going to include the same stuff, but maybe make it a little more broad and include like maybe all of your skills or something instead of like being very specific with it. But I've heard that too, that LinkedIn is becoming very popular. Actually, employee who owns a bunch of ATSs, they released their Recruiter Nation report, and LinkedIn was the number one social network for sourcing candidates, which makes sense. It's more business oriented. Do y'all, and I assume that's like, is it as common to have a job listing where people can apply, but you're also like actively doing sourcing through LinkedIn? Like, is that kind of like 50-50 whenever you're hiring?
Yes. So my approach is to go through the applicant tracking system first. And once that's exhausted, then do my sourcing. Or there are times where I'll split up the day where I'll do from 9 to 11, I'll do sourcing through the ATS. And then from 1 to 3, I'll do sourcing on LinkedIn. So really just switching it up. I like to have a variety of candidates. And it's just nice to just break up the monotony of just being on the ATS all day or being on LinkedIn all day.
Okay. So I'm like really curious, and I don't know, I might edit this out, but I just have to ask. So I've heard recruiters on LinkedIn say, the ATS isn't what everyone says. Like, there's no like searching, or there's no such thing as an ATS friendly resume, or like, you don't need to worry about ATS resume and all that stuff. But then I hear from other recruiters that like, yeah, I use the ATS to sort and filter candidates and to search for them. So I don't know what my question is, but why do some recruiters say that? And then other recruiters are like, no, we use the ATS all the time.
So I think some recruiters do say they don't use the ATS because, like, I worked with someone before that was like, I'm absolutely not sourcing through our ATS. There's no great candidates through the ATS. So he never used our ATS. And I was like, okay, fine. That's more candidates for me to find. So I think for those people, if they think that way or they've had a bad experience with finding people through the ATS, then they are like, no, I'm not going to go that route, which is fine. However, in my experience, I found great candidates through the ATS system. And again, it's a less time selling the company to a person that doesn't, that already is applying through the ATS. So I see it from that point of view. So I could see why recruiters would say that. But regardless, if you do find someone on LinkedIn, you have to upload them to the ATS for data purposes. I would think that you should still have the mentality that a resume should be ATS approved or ATS compatible.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I've just always wanted, because there was also Harvard Business School did a survey of, like, I don't know, I think it was like 3,000 HR professionals. And they found that, I don't remember the exact percentage, but I think it was something like 89% of them used certain qualifications, like years of experience or certifications, to filter or rank candidates through, you know, a program like an ATS. So I hear, like, conflicting stuff, and I'm just like, why do some people say this and some people say this? But it makes sense. I mean, every recruiter is different. So it's probably better to be safe than sorry, basically.
Right.
Okay. So then let me see. I kind of want to spend the second half of this talking about AI going into, like, resume do's and don'ts. First, like, big question that everybody wants to know, I'm sure, is, can a recruiter tell if an applicant used AI on their resume?
I can speak for myself. I can. Okay. Because you just start, especially when you start comparing people's resumes, you're like, this looks very redundant. Or, like, look at these, like, the formatting. Mm-hmm. Like, you can tell when they're using, like, an AI-generated resume where the resume is solely compatible or, like, made through AI.
Well, like, 100%. Yeah.
Where they're not even doing any, they're not touching it. They're just, using whatever they had, they're putting it through the AI system, and they're just forming a new resume for them. Reasons or ways I can tell is those action verbs. Again, if it starts looking like I see managed 5 or 10 times, I'm like, okay, AI definitely made this. Like, you didn't even try to switch it up. If the bullet points, you can kind of see, like, the lengths of it, like, all throughout is, like, the same. Like, it's just, like, it starts getting redundant. But I would say content-wise, maybe you can't really tell because obviously everyone has different roles, things like that. But I would say formatting-wise, you can kind of see, like, this looks a little too perfect or this looks a little too redundant. So I would say, yes, some recruiters probably know more than me or someone could probably spot it more. So I would just be very, very careful. When you're solely just relying on AI, you're not doing any editing at all, and you're not even trying to make it your own.
Yeah. I am. Okay. So, like, I've seen different, like, social posts or articles or something on, like, people are like, I just go into ChatGPT and I give it, like, the information, and then it writes, like, a tailored resume or something. And I'm like, oh my God, don't do that, because you should not have it be writing 100% of your resume. Now, like, so then my next question is, like, are there ways to use AI that, like, do make sense, or, like, that do make sense, that won't hurt you? Because there are, because, like, it does speed things up, and we want to be more efficient. So how could a person use it in a way that's helpful, in a way that's good?
Yeah, this is a great question. I would say use it if you're not sure about grammar or maybe spelling or the flow of it. Mm-hmm. So I would even put in, like, does this make sense? And then put the bullet point. Or does this sound okay? Things like that. Like, if you want a gut check or a pulse check, that's when you use ChatGPT or those other ones. I mostly use it for grammar. If I want to just verify if this is grammatically correct, Making sure, let's say, like if there's too much jargon or like too much of something, or if, let's say I have a long bullet point and I want to like keep it a little more concise. So I'd be like, can you take out some words or can you revamp this so it does sound more short and sweet? Like those are the ways I would use it, but I really wouldn't use it to just draft you up a full-on resume. I just use it as a pulse check.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So let me see. Let me I'll ask you if this makes sense. So like in JobScan, we have like in the resume builder, you can like you write your bullet points and stuff, or you can have there's like an AI thing that will generate the bullet points. But what I always tell people is to use the generated bullet points as like inspiration, because as inspiration of like the best way to describe that skill, and then like fill in either your measurable result or use it as like the best example for, you know, for writing about that skill. Is that kind of like another way that you could use AI in that way?
Yeah. And I love how you said use it as inspiration, because that's literally what AI as a tool should be used for. Like they say, use ChatGPT to help you like with a, with, let's say a trip that you're trying to plan and you're like, hey, help me plan this trip. It's the same thing as a resume. Help me make sure that the formatting of my resume makes sense, or does it look clean, concise? Am I writing enough? Shall I add more? Things like that. So really using it as inspiration. I really like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I always thought. Like it's kind of, unless you can, because the thing is like, it doesn't know you very well. Like it knows you, especially something like in our tool, it's been like the AI has been trained a little bit. So it knows to take certain things into consideration, but you know you better than anyone else. So you can take what it gives as, like inspiration or an example, or kind of modify it a little bit, but never like 100% AI written. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So then I guess another, okay. So to kind of like wrap that up in a nice bow, going from like, definitely do this, definitely don't do this. What do you think are the biggest mistakes that people make that are like completely avoidable? Like maybe they just didn't even know that they were supposed to do this. What would be like the major takeaway of don't do this, make sure that you're avoiding this kind of thing?
Honestly, what I've been seeing nowadays is resumes are too long. People really think that they got to put every single thing that they've done in every single role that they did. Even bullet points. There's sometimes for like the role they have now or their most recent role, they'll have 10 bullet points.
Oh, wow.
Like we got to put that. We got to put that down to maybe four or five, maybe six. But anything over six, it's like, let's move on. So really the length nowadays, I think people want to really sell themselves. And a lot of people think the more I put on, the more chances I'm going to get the interview. And there's no correlation with that. So you got to really think one page again, as someone that's not in, a, in, not in, in an exec role. So anything below director, keep it one page. Director and up, two. But even with two pages, make sure you don't have more than six bullet points per role.
Okay.
And that kind of leads in with that, keeping that resume clean and concise. It's not a wall of text, because when you see 10 bullet points for one role, that's a wall of text. And it's just going to be very hard to read. And really just keeping in mind, again, average time a resume is read by a recruiter is 20 seconds. Like they're really not spending a lot of time reading. I would say the only time they spend a lot of time is when you're in the final rounds and they're debriefing between you and another candidate. And they're trying to figure out, okay, candidate A has this, this, and this, and candidate B has this, this, and this. So I would say, again, just making sure that your resume does align with the job description, making sure you do have the tools and skills that the job description is asking for. And then, again, keep it not so wordy and not too many bullet points that are overwhelming to the eye.
Okay. Okay. Along the lines of like being relevant, if like, let's say a person doesn't have a job title match or like really relevant experience, should they just not apply for the role? Like, is this about being like giving yourself the best, like not spray and pray, you know, like only apply for the roles that you have relevant experience to. It, like, would that be the best way to look at it?
Yeah. You have to think that recruiters and hiring managers, they have a checklist and they're going through that checklist when they're looking at resumes. And some of the things on that checklist is, does this person have a relevant title or role compared to what we're hiring for? Do they have those tools that we named in the job description? Mm. So really, as a candidate, pay attention to the job description. Don't just apply to random things and you haven't even looked. You just look, you're applying just because the company is cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's great, but are you even a product manager when this role is asking for that? Yeah. Or are you a software engineer? If you're a software engineer and it's a software engineering role, great. But do you have the tools like front end, back end, things like that? So really pay attention to the job description because that's what they're asking for. And that's what they're going to ask you during those interviews.
Okay. I like it. So I would say major takeaway is relevancy in every way, in your job titles, in your achievements, even in the interview. Like, what you want to do is not just say, I've done this job, but you want to get even down to the details of being relevant to what they're looking for. So yeah, this has been like amazing advice. It's so interesting to hear from a recruiter. I can imagine for people that you work with, it's also very helpful too. Please, can you share where people can find you on LinkedIn or your site?
Yes. So my LinkedIn is Kiana Carter. And then I have my website, yourkeycoach.com. And then I'm also on Instagram where I share some career tips and tricks. So Your Key Coach is my Instagram name. And those are the three sites you can find me on.
Cool. And Key is K-E-Y, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Which I love because your name is Kiana. Is that where that came from? Okay.
Yes.
That's so good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yes. Thanks for being on the show. This was awesome. Thank you for your time.
Yes. Thank you for having me.